My name is Chioki, and I am a grain of sand.
And tell me a little bit about sort of where you spend your days right now.
Right now, I am in an aquarium in some dude's house. There's a couple of fish. I think they're goldfish. They're very confused. They do this thing where they swim toward the boundary of the tank. And then they kind of realize it's a boundary. And each time they say, oh, it must be the other way. And then they just kind of turn around. And they swim toward the other boundary. Hit it. And then they're like, oh, it must be the other way. Like I think they're just lost in a place and they have to find the exit, but they've been doing that for like 2 years now.
Do you feel sorry for them?
No, not at all. They seem like really stupid fish.
I guess you've been on a beach and you've been in the ocean, so you have enough experience to know there is more than the aquarium. But, you know, maybe they don't.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if there's one difference between them and I... Sorry, I'm having trouble with the pronouns. You know, we're doing this interview and I'm a grain of sand.
Yeah.
But that's not really the way that I would think of myself. I think normally I would just say we are sand.
Okay.
So you see that there's the kind of mass noun thing happening. And it's weird to talk to you because you don't have a mass noun thing, or you don't seem to have a mass noun arrangement. So you say of yourself that you're a person, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say I am a person.
So, like, why aren't you a grain of person?
Like, why do I not consider myself as, like, a fraction of all of humanity?
Yeah. Like, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
It just seems to me like if you recognize the degree to which you owed your existence to other people, you might also be nicer to other people.
Yeah, I read this thing that there are 7 quintillion, 500 quadrillion grains of sand in the world. So like all of that you consider is you.
I mean, I'm not saying there's a psychic connection or whatever. I'm just saying that when I think of what I am the sand in the aquarium, or we are the sand. And when I'm on a beach, we are the sand on the beach.
Does it ever get overwhelming? You know, I think about the difference between the aquarium and the beach when, you know, there are probably thousands versus millions or billions. When it's that many that you feel like you're a part of, is... what does that feel like? Is that ever too much?
I mean, I think that maybe the opposite is true, that when we're in an aquarium and there's not that many of us, then it feels like too little.
Well, I'd like to ask you about the beach. I guess, first of all, what was it like having humans sit on you?
I mean, as near as I can tell, most of the humans who come to the beach, that is like the journey that you all seem to like of going to the beach, is always to some degree a frustrated journey.
Yeah.
You either forgot something, or you forgot that it was going to be hot that day, or you don't like that someone else is playing music, or you've lost track of someone and you can't find them. Like I've never really seen a human have a fully pleasurable experience at the beach. There's always a something of some sort that goes wrong. And then you all often express a great deal of surprise that there's sand everywhere.
Yeah. I have to say, I find the beach, at least just like sitting on the beach, boring. Do you find it boring?
Yeah, so I don't really experience boredom. All of my existence is observation and reflection, so I'm never bored.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed that humans have a kind of problem with, I say a problem with boredom. They have a problem with time, right? Because it seems to me that boredom reveals a fundamental anxiety that many humans have about their lives in the first place. A constant kind of question as to where is this going? What should I be doing? And so then there's not really a willingness to kind of sit and just be, which I recommend. You should really try it sometime.
Do you want to just sit and be right now?
Oh man, that sounds great. Let's do it.
I have to say, I'm already starting to feel uncomfortable.
I think this is great.
I know I'm supposed to be enjoying this silence, the space between us talking, but I'm only worried about the space as it's happening.
You feel the need to fill all silence, don't you?
Most silence, yeah.
I feel like if you could let go of that, you would perceive a lot more in the world.
I'm sitting in the silence, I'm starting to notice the silence. Like I know I'm noticing what the room I'm in sounds like. Would it be cheating to bring up the sound of the beach? So it was like what it was when you were the sand of the beach, doing this sitting and being?
I mean, I do like the sound of the beach.
So we've talked about you being on the beach and in the aquarium. Sand is also used a lot by humans, like in construction, putting out fires. Have you ever had to do any of that?
No, I haven't. I have nightmares about being sandpaper.
Yeah.
But nah, I mean, I've never been in a sandblaster. I've never been used to smother a fire. Yeah, and no one has ever called for Inspector Sands.
I'm sorry?
Inspector Sands. It's in London. They have like a secret code for when there's a fire or something like that on the subway. So you'll hear over the PA, Inspector Sands, please report to the control room. I think it's a callback to back when they used sand to put out fires, right? So they don't want to say they have a fire because, you know, panic. So instead they say, Inspector Sands, da-da-da.
I'm pulling it up here. There's a video of an Inspector Sands alarm here.
Would Inspector Sands please go to the operations room immediately?
Everyone is just kind of looking around. Like, no one is alarmed.
Would Inspector Sands
But clearly there's something going on here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably slight confusion is better than the all-out panic of thinking there's a fire when you're literally in a tube.
Yeah. Hello, I'm calling for Eleanor.
Hi there. Yes, it's Ellen speaking.
Hi. So I understand you are the voice of some of the underground trains in the UK. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, some of the mainly Northern Piccadilly and Jubilee lines in the on the London Underground, but on several other stations and lines as well now.
So, like, what's an example of something I might hear your voice saying?
So, at, say, Farringdon Station, you might hear me saying something like, "The next train to Heathrow, terminals 1, 2, and 3 will depart in 3 minutes." Something like that.
So, are you, you're familiar with the Inspector Sands announcement?
I've heard of it, yes. I've heard about it. Luckily, I haven't actually heard it going out, but I remember my mum ringing me from a platform once saying, "I just heard Inspector Sands, should I get out?" And I said, "Well, yeah, just, you know, just in case, just get out." But actually, nothing serious had happened. I think, you know, it may even have been that there might have been a very small fire controlled and contained, in the kitchen or so. It could have been anything.
Have you ever recorded an Inspector Sands announcement?
No, I haven't. No. What we found when we were recording the tube announcements, and this is, well, I'd just given birth to our twins the week before we got the contract, so they're 13 and a half now. So it's quite a long time ago that I recorded them. But we found I was the nice, friendly voice that told you which train to catch. But anything that was kind of, right, you need to listen and you need to behave, was Phil. So anything that really needed to be listened to, apparently you needed a man to do that.
So Phil, your husband Phil, did the Inspector Sands because it looked like they wanted the male authoritative voice.
Mm-hmm.
What did he, do you remember talking to him about doing the Inspector Sands or talking about Inspector Sands?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he quite liked the fact that he was in on a secret. But of course, for something like that, when it's an announcement that you know could herald bad things, you don't actually want it to be delivered ever. You know, we would both be very happy if it was never heard.
So can I ask, when you're recording these, you know, various train announcements, what kind of direction do you get? What do they tell you they want from your voice?
Well, you need to be as clear and as neutral as possible. They deliberately chose my voice and Phil's voice because we're just very clear, very neutral, and very easy to understand. And the other thing is that the way that we've done it is we've always used the same studio, the same microphone, obviously the same voices. And for consistency reasons, we kind of signed a contract to say that we would be available for 10 years, you know, unless obviously anything happened. And actually, God bless him, Phil died about, you know, 3 weeks after that 10 years has expired. So he sort of did his time. But fortunately, we've got enough of his voice on record that it's never been an issue.
I was sorry to hear that.
Thank you. He was a good guy. You know, very, very lovely guy. And I feel very privileged as a widow to have his voice. It's, I don't take that lightly because I know a lot of people who would give anything to hear their husband's voice again. And mine won't shut up. You know, he never did. And I'm hoping you never will.
So can I ask, and if this is too personal, just let me know. But
no, okay.
Does it happen that you'll be standing on a platform somewhere, just going wherever you're going, and you'll hear his voice?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I frequently travel to London for meetings and work and recordings and what have you. And yeah, I hear him a lot, and it's always lovely to hear him. And I quite like the fact that obviously nobody else would know that this is so special for me. And I just love the fact that he's still there, just getting on with life, you know, directing people to where they need to go, and just being part of the furniture of London. But actually hearing that he's been taken off certain platforms. I know he used to be the main voice at Waterloo until about a year and a bit ago. And when somebody told me that he'd gone from Waterloo, I grieved again as if I'd lost him. you know, it affected me that much, yeah. Knowing that his voice was being sort of slowly taken away.
Is there a recording that you particularly like hearing of his?
Well, I suppose Mind the Gap is the iconic one. That's the one that everybody knows and everybody recognises. So I love the fact that he is that voice. But I ran the London Marathon in April because it was just something that I kind of wanted to do. I wanted to raise money for a cancer charity because, you know, in Phil's memory. And I just felt it was a lovely omen because I was staying in a hotel the night before and hadn't heard Phil at all. And got to my hotel, I think it was Hyde Park, and the doors opened, Mind the Gap, please. And I thought, yep, he's there, he's watching out for me, this is going to go well. And again, when I'd finished, all I could hear was myself, telling myself which train to catch. So that was really nice, actually. There were certain times when I just say, yep, he's looking after me, which of course is probably nonsense, but it's lovely to think.
Yeah. Well, this has been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for asking me. It's been lovely to speak to you.
So, Chioki, there's sort of the beaches which I'm familiar with, which is like kind of, I guess, beige sand. And then humans love to talk about white sand beaches. Like they'll be like an ad for a tropical resort and they'll talk about their white sand beaches. Have you ever encountered white sand?
Oh, yeah. That's not sand.
You're saying white sand is not, like, you don't think of it as sand.
Oh, no, no one should think of it as sand. That's poop.
Do you just not like white sand?
No. I mean, no, that's not the problem. I'm just saying that white sand isn't sand. It is literally poop. It's parrotfish poop. Parrotfish, they eat coral and they poop what you are calling white sand.
So when I look at, you know, a white sand beach, what I'm seeing is centuries of parrotfish poop.
That is exactly right. Yeah. And furthermore, every sandcastle you build on a white sand beach is actually a poop castle.
Right. Do you know how old you are?
Not exactly, no. I think it probably would amount to somewhere in the hundreds of thousands of years. Like, I mean, I wasn't always sand, right? Like, there was a time when I was a boulder.
Yeah,
so, you know, like, do you know about the myth of Sisyphus?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a funny one to me because Sisyphus is cursed to roll this boulder up the hill for eternity. But really, the boulder would eventually erode. I mean, 100,000 years or so, it would be like a little pebble. Like, just like stick it out, Sisyphus, you'll be done in no time, you know?
Eventually, it's just going to be sand.
Yeah, exactly. And in addition, the hill will also erode. And so, you know, Sisyphus, after some time, would have a flat plain instead of a hill and maybe like a marble instead of a boulder.
Yeah. So, yeah, so he's cursed for eternity, but really he just needs to get through, I don't know, 50,000 years or something.
Yeah, like he should really stick to it, and then that'll show the gods.
It's funny to think about a man serving out his eternal curse, and what it is very easily pushing a marble along the ground.
Yeah. And also, like, maybe stop conscripting innocent boulders and to your curses, humans.
You know, you're right. It ultimately ends up worse for the boulder than for Sisyphus.
Oh, for sure.
The boulder is destroyed while Sisyphus lives on for eternity.
See what I mean? And yeah, and like, and is dizzy the whole time? I don't know. And how good is, like, and how good is Sisyphus in conversation?
So this might be a strange thing to say, but you seem kind of remarkably free from worry.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say that it's hard to have anxiety when you count time in geologic ages. Like I say, I was a boulder once upon a time, and I'm part of sand now. So that was a long time period.
Right.
I think that time under reflection gives one the space to think about how to direct one's anxieties, whether to have them, what to worry about, what to fear, what to just kind of be okay with. And I think that by the time one becomes a grain of sand, especially a grain of sand as small as I am, then there's not really any place for anxiety. One just kind of accepts that erosion is the only law.
I'll tell you that I realized recently that when I go out to eat, after I order, when I'm waiting for the food to come, I realize I have a kind of low-grade anxiety that I've ordered the wrong thing and that I've set myself up for a less than optimal experience.
So just to make sure I have this right.
Yeah.
Human beings strive for individuality but are also intimidated by options.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely true.
All right. Okay. Okay. But, like, isn't it, like, literally always true that you're missing out on a better or another something else?
Like,
isn't that the state of human existence? Like, to be is to be missing out on something somewhere at some time, all the time?
Because I can't be everywhere any individual moment, there's something else I could be doing. That's what
yeah. You're worried about, like, whether your BLT would have been better than the grilled cheese, but you weren't just choosing between the grilled cheese and a BLT. You were choosing between the grilled cheese and any other thing that is possible within human experience. In that moment, instead of a grilled cheese, you could be spending time with your mom. You could be going to see the Northern Lights. You could be napping. You could be on a beach somewhere with me between your toes.
How does that feel, by the way?
It depends on the toes.
Yeah.
I mean, right now you're talking to me. That's a choice. Is it the best possible choice for this moment? You could be doing anything. You could be with anyone.
This is Everything is Alive. The show is produced by Jennifer Mills and me, Ian Chillog. We got help this week from Emily Spivak and Eva Walchover. Also, special thanks to Stevie Lane. We are grateful to the reporting of Royson O'Connor and James Cave. Also, a big thanks to Eleanor Hamilton for talking to us about Inspector Sands. Chioki, the Grain of Sand, was played by Chioki Iansen. We heard music in this episode from Blue Dot Sessions. Everything is Alive is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX. We mean it. And without executive producer Julie Shapiro, we would just be a grain of sand stuck between someone's toes. You can get in touch with us any number of ways at everythingisalive.com. We'll see you soon.
Radiotopia. From PRX.